Welcome, reanimated fans, to this week's episode. I am, as always, H.A. Conrad here in Brooklyn, and joining me from the West Coast is my intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin. Hello, Stuart.
Hello, I am temporarily Stuart.
Temporarily. Wait, who would you become after becoming Stuart?
Well, as in, you are, as always, H.A. Conrad. I'm just making a comment about the, you know, ephemeral nature of life in general.
True, true. But anyway, we got some stuff to talk about today. We're going to dive into our recap review of Fear the Walking Dead Season 5, the first two episodes. But before we hop into that, we're going to talk about a couple little news items. Not too much today, but we did see that a trailer came out for a film called Zoo. And that actually, it's not a very long trailer, hasn't had that many views, but it looks kind of cool, so we may have to explore that later. But the premise of the movie is that this couple who has kind of fallen out of love are stuck in an apartment during a pandemic and apparently rediscover their relationship during this.
I just think this is an amazing idea for a zombie movie. I don't know if this has been done before. It feels fresh to me, and I like the fact that you're going to put two people who are kind of already at each other's last nerve, and then put them into a zombie apocalypse, and I love it. I love that.
Well, we'll have to keep track of this, and hopefully it'll get more views and more of a following as it progresses.
Yeah.
Next up was a little listicle you found on Gizmodo, and I was very happy to see that we actually have watched most of these, but there was one on this list, and the title of this was Ha Ha Ha. Zombie movies that didn't cost an arm and a leg to make. But the majority of the films on here, both we have watched and actually most of them, I think we've enjoyed. So it had Pontypool, obviously, yep. our you know, the thing that started it all. Night of the Living Dead is on here.
Pontypool is another one of our 2-hour reviews, I feel like.
I know. But it also had Fido, Anna and the Apocalypse,
Dead Snow,
The Battery. So all these things we love. But one of the films that was on here we have not seen, so we may have to reserve this for future reviewing. But this is called Versus, and I'm excited about it given its illustrious company and the rest of this list. So I think we should check that out later. But interesting list in general. So lastly on this list, we mentioned this film before when we heard that it was in production. And this is a feminist zombie film called Endzeit, Ever After. It premiered at a film festival in 2018, which I think is when we first talked about it. And I think it's making its way through the film festival circuit. Apparently, it was released at IFC in New York this past Friday, but it is not yet done a wider release, though it hit the article hints at that. So there's a possibility it may be taking the Anna and the Apocalypse route where it's going to make its way through film festivals, maybe gain a following, and then they're going to try for a wider release and then do some kind of streaming digital release.
I found that this review wasn't too full of spoilers, which was good. And it's not one of these New York, well, the one that I read was in the New York Times, and that one did not approach it like so many of the major outlets do, which was there's no new good ideas in zombie movies. Cause I feel like I've read that critique 100 times, no new critiques, I would say, about zombie movies either. But this one, it doesn't take that same tack. It does bemoan, you know, poor decision making in horror films, which I think is something that horror fans just have to get used to. As far as the characters make poor decisions. But I think that this is a safe review to read for the most part if you're interested in this film and wanting to know if it would pique your interest. So you could take a look at that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think they did a very good job at not having this kind of spoil all the little tidbits and things. So we'll keep an eye on that, but looking forward to potentially reviewing that later. I am hoping that it gets released in the theaters. I do enjoy seeing these kinds of films in the theaters, but it's sometimes rare when they're independent like this. And in the Apocalypse, we had to wait a while for that, so maybe it just has to gain some momentum, but we'll see and keep everybody posted on that. So next up is Fear the Walking Dead season 5, and this new season premiered in early June, so we're actually pretty close to the premiere date, which is sometimes a rarity for us.
For Reanimated, this is super fast. Let's just talk quickly about where we left off with the last season, which was basically the gang all make friends again. Mm-hmm. Charlie and Alicia made friends. Morgan became part of the gang and its de facto leader. Its moral compass, which is always a good sign on The Walking Dead when you're the moral compass, right? And they all decide to, they take in Mo and Wendell and all these, this like kind of interesting cast of characters and decide to take over Clayton Polar Bear, his denim factory, which was his base of operations for this trucking network. Mm-hmm. That they were kind of following up during last season. And so when we left at the end of last season, it was like, we're going to help people and we're going to do it from here and it's going to be amazing. And we were kind of pumped for the potential of these like caravans that were going to go out helping people. Right. And I remember you and I left off last season finale on kind of an optimistic note.
Yeah. But also it was like, one of the things that we were hoping that they come up with during this season is some better antagonists. And
yes. And, well, Filthy Woman was a little one note. Right?
Correct.
A little OP considering who she was and what she was.
Right. So anyway, this is where we are. And so it jumps right into action. Though somewhat confusing, the season opens with these two kids trying to shoot a deer. They're interrupted at their task or trying to get the deer when a plane crashes out of nowhere. And so that is definitely, sort of a big flaming, big time opening scene, I guess.
Big time flaming set piece to begin your
correct
season. Yeah, for sure.
Which obviously attracts all the walkers and that kind of thing. We've got a lot of drama. This is dramatic.
This is of note because also like these kids were about to fire a rifle in these woods and there were apparently just hundreds of zombies like within a
right
short walk from where they
yeah
are. When they get to the car, the plane crash, there are, I mean, they kill like 100 zombies in this episode.
Yeah, and you know, it again, so obviously I know it's me being nitpicky with this show. Sometimes the logic behind this show or the logic behind characters that should know better, just like, or the lack of logic, I guess I should say, it just truly just grates on my nerves. And so look, we know these kids have been surviving. They've been surviving a long time. They know better than to shoot, right? So, or they know better. They know that if they're going to shoot, the walkers are going to come. And yet they just stand there and wait for the walkers to come. And they both say things like, oh, you gotta run or you gotta go or whatever, Max, whatever. Yeah. And then they don't. And it drives me nuts. I'm just like, really? Come on.
I find it interesting that you are pointing out that these kids might not be really great at survival in the zombie apocalypse. Hold on to that. Put it in your hip pocket because I know you haven't watched all of the episodes of this season yet.
No, I mean, clearly they are great at survival because they're there. So
because they are alive, but they're not exhibiting what you might call great survival instincts.
Well,
or
as we get further into this episode, the logic behind not these two particular characters, but their sibling, definitely, like, her instincts seem to be on point. Just saying.
Yeah.
But okay. So the fact that they don't have this is kind of strange. But mm-hmm. Anyway, this introduces and brings in our intrepid heroes, or at least part of them. So the plane is carrying Morgan, Althea.
Oh, yeah. Man, the reveal, Alicia's reveal is pretty badass. Like,
yeah,
almost comic, very comic booky, right?
Yep.
Out of the fog, we're here to help. And then holding her cool improvised weapon,
yep,
that is a little bit too cool.
Yep.
But it's still pretty cool.
Yep.
With a giant torn propeller,
mm-hmm,
that she's like cutting her hands with as she decapitates dozens of zombies. It does feel a little over the top. And I'd say that this season, there are a couple of other instances of things being over the top so far in the first three episodes that I've seen. But this is a pretty, I mean, I'm willing to be along for the ride for this. Alicia just Alicia's obviously in these two episodes. We also see that Alicia has like a cause that she has completely given herself into, which is redemption, mm-hmm. or the search for it, right? And so, all of these actions of her just being a total heroic figure all come back to her search for trying to make up for the bad person that she was in season four.
Yeah, and you know, I think that. It's supposed to be dramatic. I wasn't bothered by the over-the-top nature of it. It's something that I kind of expected that they were going to, especially with this whole plane crash thing. So that was kind of a cool thing. You know exactly who she is and what she's doing right away.
Oh, yeah.
We have also this whole group working really well together. June, Althea, you know, working to help Luciana, well, who's gotten... like pinioned by this thing. Like, that was a different idea.
Yeah, you know, they don't like Luciana to have too much power in this show. Ever since her introduction, where she was the most powerful person in her colonia as like the chief of the scouts, they don't really like her to be too awesome. I like how you say that. Yeah, these guys are a well-oiled machine, and it's weird because they are. They're like swinging down through the plane. They're saving each other left and right. They're saving kids. They're doing pithy one-liners. But really, let's look at what just happened. Althea just crashed an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Althea might be the weak link also, because when she gets out of the airplane, then she becomes like camera woman again and is like having to.
I was hoping we were past this little stupid piece of her character, but apparently not. And I knew you were like, I knew you were thinking HA is going to hate this part. And like, I totally was like, oh my God. And I wrote this note just like, the camera woman stupid narrative is back again. And basically, it's just, if those of you who listen to our prior reviews of this show know that I hate the camera narrative with Al, because she basically constantly makes these really broad statements about her filming and her stories and whatever, and just does dumb things that might get either her or other people killed because of the camera. So in this case, she manages to escape the cockpit of the plane that she has crashed, and goes and immediately tries to find, like, and she's looking at the camera, and it's always, and it's this really weird long pause where she's like, oh, is that a camera? I don't know. Is my camera okay? I don't know. And then gets attacked by a walker that she could entirely have avoided. And it's a walker that's in like really weird outfit. Like, I can't even describe this. It's almost like a Tron outfit, I would say.
Yeah. Super futuristic armor that with a visor that looks like you can't see through it.
Yep.
So it's, yeah, definitely interesting.
And it can't bite her because it's wearing this thing, but it's also, again, goes back to what I was saying from the beginning, how has she survived so long doing stupid stuff like this? And she does get saved, or she saves her, she manages to kill it herself, or at least pinion it, because it can't get her through this visor. But it's just, the whole thing is dumb, and again, goes for her camera as opposed to trying to like get something to help Luciana, which they're looking, the whole point of this is that they're looking for like hacksaws, because Luciana has been pinioned by this rebar, I guess. I don't know what I would call that thing that she's gotten into her.
It's like the one random piece of metal in the airplane that just apparently stuck her to the side of it.
Right.
But yeah, so Al is not being helpful, and she not only, she doubles down on this behavior later on in the episode when she goes back out there alone at night.
In the dark and the rain, and it's stupid.
And again, it's just looking at through a camera, and she leaves the truck's lights on, and she's like, I'm onto something. I mean, she does find some intel, and this is crossover.
All right, but while you were watching her look at that thing through the camera, were you just like, because I was like, why wouldn't you just take that back to the truck so it's not getting wet, you weirdo?
I know, she takes it all out of like the plastic protective cover and is like, oh, I'm gonna hold this map out in the pouring rain. Yeah,
and videotape it with my camera covered all over in saran wrap. Like, the whole thing is stupid. Sorry Fear the Walking Dead writers, you really, this thing with her character is just ridiculous.
It's a little frustrating.
But
we do, I mean, the thing is, they can't let us have all that intel, right? Like, the show, our characters would know too much, in quotes, if our characters, our heroes, were actually able to get all this intel, then the heroes on the show would be too empowered with knowledge, as opposed to how they are in the show when the sister shows up and saves their butts at the plane crash, and she's like, this place is worse than it seems, and later on again she's like, this place is. It's so much worse. And they're like, what are you talking? What do you mean?
Actually,
instead of saying it out loud, she goes, oh, you'll see.
What I actually was laughing about, I'm like, oh, so she is playing the character that Adam Driver was playing in in The Dead Don't Die. This is all going to end very badly. And that's essentially what she is saying.
She never says it out. She just never finishes the thought, though. And Alicia is getting pissed off about it. And I'm right there with Alicia, like, hey, girl, just say the thing. Like, right. Finish your sentence.
Finish the thought. But part of this is that, you know, I think they could do some things with Al where it would have made sense. Like, for example, just have her grab the bag thing and go back to the car or something. She still could have been hijacked there. It just would have made more sense to do it that way. And that's what bothers me, is because they constantly have her act like a stupid person. And like, I just don't buy it in this particular world that she would still be around. And so that's what bothers me. It's like, you could have had them, and I guess, you know, they have to try to do the shot where they show the other guy in the same kind of futuristic outfit taking her, but that was what bothered me so much. It's like, I just don't buy that she would have taken that thing out in the pouring rain and still be videotaping it, because this just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, and she had just talked with Morgan about going back to get this together and just defied him again. Like, that doesn't make any sense. At least bring some backup, right? So, anyway, so the upshot of all of this is that she is taken by some weird futuristic guy and nobody knows where she is. So there's that. And then, as you talked about, we have the third sibling of the kids that we saw in the beginning, and that she's like kind of creepy. She's kind of playing the Brandon Stark of this particular episode, where she's implying some dark future and knowledge.
She's also just she's a tween who acts way older and more authoritative than she ought, you know, like, just cause she's the oldest sibling. She's telling all these grownups like what to do and telling them that they don't know what they're talking about. These characters are always interesting, and I prefer. I mean, I think that these are three interesting kid characters who they've introduced, mm-hmm. and they don't stick around. They're like, oh, you guys are all going down. They're kind of like Charlie's in a way.
They are.
And so it's too bad that Charlie can't be there to be like, no, you guys, I was like you once, and these guys are okay. Because Charlie, Mo, Wendell, and Strand were all left behind. They didn't come along in the airplane, and they're having their own adventures. Although, for the most part, they're just not doing anything. Like, Mo and Wendell and Charlie are literally just sitting in the back of the tractor trailer.
Right.
In the semi, just like, oh, man, sucks that our base got taken away.
Right.
Which is also what's been happening in this episode. I know I'm going all over the place on this, but I assume that everybody listening to this has already watched the episode.
Right.
And so, come with me in my brain, where it just bounces from the beginning to the end, to the middle, to the end.
Well, I think I can say, since you brought up that fact, that this group, like, so they decided at the end of the last season that they're going to go out and help people. And, you know, they just don't really seem like, I think, again, I wish that the writers would sit down and really think out how they are presenting this stuff, because this group as a whole, all of them, Morgan, all of them have run into different groups of people that are not helpful, right? So the fact that the Clayton sort of tractor trailer mission that they've decided to take this on is great, but I also feel like you need to, as a group, decide, all right, well, if we're going to do this, we have to basically protect ourselves, protect our base. If we're going to go out and rescue people, we have to make some kind of fail safes, like, you know, so that our base is intact and that the people that we're rescuing are not just trying to like tempt us into a trap to get our resources. Because generally, and it is more rare to find people that are willing to help or willing to, like, you know, that have like positive intentions as opposed to everybody else who just tries to get their resources. So if you know that the general sort of mode of survival is to kind of get these resources and you might have to win people over, you still need to protect yourselves in order to be able to carry out that mission. And it doesn't feel like it. The whole reason we find out that they have crashed this plane and gone into this area is because they had some walkie-talkie interaction with this guy named Logan. And Logan was supposedly out here at this truck stop. He is not there. And, I mean, I know it would be hard to confirm that, but wouldn't you be, like, careful and not divide your group of people this way, not leave your home base unguarded? And it's sort of weird to me that they did this. And basically, the upshot of all of this is that it was absolutely a trap. And Logan is the other side of Clayton's trucking company, and so he wants to take back his building, which also seems weird because why would he have left it in the first place, right? Yeah.
Where was he while Clayton was running his operation out of here? And he apparently is not alone. He has like four or five little buddies. But yeah, what's he been doing? And maybe we'll learn that. And by the way, the actor playing Logan, I like him. He was in The Stand. He was like the crazy, insane guy in The Stand. The Agent of Chaos, you might call him. I don't know if you remember that character.
Oh, I do. I do.
Yeah. And he was in The Society. No, not Society. He was in that new werewolf show on Netflix. What's it called? I forget what it's called. About the Hermetic Order of the Blue Rose. He plays the main character's grandfather on that show. He's a great actor. He typically plays somebody that you can't trust.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. The minute I saw him, I was like, oh, no.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go, because, yes, he is very good. But what's interesting about him is that he is a little bit, like, he's always sort of, like, there is a, like, he plays shades of gray pretty well, too. Mm-hmm. Like, because there's usually some logic for why he's doing the things that he's doing. I would also point out that he was Max Headroom.
Yes, of course. And he was apparently in Dawn of the Dead. So his name's Matt Frewer.
Yeah.
And he was in Dawn of the Dead in 2004 as a guy called Frank. Do we remember a character named Frank?
Yes. Yes.
Who was Frank? He's obviously one of the other people in the mall. But I do not recall him.
Well, we'll have to look it up. I do remember him being in that. He was also in Orphan Black. I just in general like him. And I don't know if you were a Watchmen fan, but he played Moloch in that. So he always plays these kind of character roles that have some darkness in them often. So I really like him as a...
Either way, as if he's going to set up to be the big bad for this season, although it seems like they have a lot of different people to choose from so far, it's probably going to be the three-ring futuristic soldiers, their organization. Maybe it's going to be Logan because he took their base. Maybe he's not going to... Maybe he'll be just a speed bump. But this first episode has set up quite a few different parties to potentially be the antagonists for the season. Including Matt Frewer's Logan.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know what? I have the title and deed for this place and I just wanted you out of the way. I'm non-confrontational by nature. I do think that this is not a great plan, though. He didn't know that they were going to get an airplane. He just wanted them to drive or go as far away as they could in this truck stop network. This also makes me think, damn, Clayton's truck stop network is huge. If there was a place where you had to actually fly to, mm-hmm. to get there. I mean, they probably just got the plane to do it quickly as opposed to out of necessity. But again, how did Clayton's truck stop guys all get taken down so easily by the filthy woman?
Right. Like, it just seems...
And entirely. Like, 100% of them got taken out by the filthy woman, basically. Except for Polar Bear, who got taken out by, like, a utility pole.
Yeah. And again, this is a massive operation, or at least from what we have seen, even just from where their home base is. So agreed, it seems to defy logic that all of them could have been taken out. But anyway, I guess that's where how they've had it set up here. And basically, the Matt Frewer character, Logan, it doesn't really want to get into battle. So at least he's not, like, in terms of being the big bad, he's not, like, mustache twirly in that way. He actually is, in this way, I thought this was a smart thing. He doesn't really want to lose his people. He doesn't really want to kill them, as far as we know. He just wants his stuff back.
This is also an issue, because how does he think this is going to end? He thinks they're just going to go away?
Right. And also, if he has been monitoring them, he knows that they're scrappy. So, in any case, he's actually pushed out a lot of the supplies. It's not like he left them out totally destitute. He's just like, I want my factory back. So that was kind of stupid. And then we've got Victor and Charlie and Wendell. What is the brewing person? I forget her name sometimes.
Mo.
They are all kind of out there in the world trying to figure out how to help their friends. And of course, through all of this, for once, and again, this is just, I think this is just a way for the writers to justify Al's stupid video storyline. But apparently, Daniel Salazar has a plane, and she's videotaped him. She did her interview with him in some other time. That's very convenient. And so basically says that Vic and them have to find him so they have a plane to rescue. It seems very far-fetched, no?
I mean, yeah, of course. It's the odds. But this is how they justify having the Althea character, and how they justify her whole camera obsession, is that she's gathered all this intelligence.
But the funny thing is that she actually, there is a bit of a tip of the hat to how ridiculous it is, because she does even say, I know my videotaping thing doesn't seem like it's useful, but this time it's useful because I know this guy that has a plane. And it's like, oh, writers, really, really? Anyway, so that's how Victor goes in search of Daniel Salazar, which again, I mean, he knows Daniel, but would you actually send Victor to go and talk to him? Right? Because, obviously he talked to Al, so it's not like he'll totally kill anybody coming to see him. Wouldn't it make more sense to send, like, Wendell or Mo or somebody he doesn't hate and doesn't know? But, again, I guess he doesn't know them, so maybe he wouldn't be able to be convinced. So instead, Victor goes, and it's actually a pretty funny interaction initially with them. He's got a cat named Skidmark. He's got all sorts of defenses. It is a cute cat. He's got all sorts of defenses set up. As you would expect, Daniel is quite resourceful.
But he seems to be entirely by himself, other than a cat.
Right.
And the last time we saw Salazar, I remember, was at the dam when Strand had shot him in the face.
Yep.
And we thought he was dead. Like, it looked to me like he was going to die. But then he does some ninja stuff, you know, Salazar style, and shoots a bunch of those bikers and escapes, apparently. Yep.
Just in his own garage with the cat. Just
he seems 100% healed, though. Barely even a scar where the bullet exited his face.
Yeah, he looks good. Looks healthy.
Looks amazingly good. Weirdly good. And there's some interesting timeline stuff that's coming up, too, now. Not just now, but really in the next episode when another character is introduced and shares some timeline information. But what I can tell you, HA, without spoiling the next episode or the third episode for you, is that we are effectively we are behind the Walking Dead Prime still, like way behind where it is now. But since there was a giant time jump in season 9 of The Walking Dead, we are in the first couple episodes of The Walking Dead season 9, timeline wise right now.
Well, yeah,
that was laid out in a comicbook.com. Article based on intel that we'll get, that you and I will get in episode 3.
Okay, well, but I'll watch that. I will definitely watch that next. I honestly, the reason why I didn't watch it was because, as you know, sometimes I just blend the episodes together, and I wanted to make sure that we were just talking about these because there was a lot to cover.
That's fair.
So, to segue into our next episode, have you watched Chernobyl?
Right, yeah, and then suddenly we're talking about dosimeters, and I'm like, wait a second, I know this lingo.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. So, it was cool that they did that. And I think Grace is a cool character. You and I were both excited to see this actress who was from Gallivant and some other show that you were...
Yeah, she's
Once
awesome.
Once Upon a Time? Or
she's in a lot of different things, but I really like her generally as an actor.
Is she British?
I think so. But basically, one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, generally and vaguely, is what would happen to all the, you know,
power plants
that are no longer being manned. And I was very excited to see that they brought this kind of storyline to the show.
Clearly, you just hit AZ5 and everything's going to be okay, right?
Yes, of course. and, you know, the reason why I bring up Chernobyl is that I actually watched that. If you have not watched that, it is an amazing show, though very hard to watch. I had to really space it out because it's pretty dark and difficult. It is a difficult show to watch, especially the penultimate episode. So in line with that, and maybe not so coincidentally, this is one of the storylines here. So Grace is a worker who basically tried to keep the power plant going because she knew that it was dangerous. And this was not a successful foray. And some of the workers who had been there and trying to help keep things going all got turned into walkers, but because they absorbed a lot of the radiation, they're dangerous to go out into the world. So she's been basically, I think there's about 60 of them, and she's been trying to take care of them. How we run into her is that Morgan and Alicia, who have been in search of Al, run amok of some of these things, and Morgan gets semi-contaminated and has to be decontaminated by Grace.
And his stick, which is a huge loss. That stick's basically a character on this show.
Yep. So
I mean, that's all of, not all of Eastman's legacy, but Eastman made that stick for him.
Yep.
It's bad mojo.
Yep. Anyway, we got that going on. There's a lot of explanation about the radiation, and it's an interesting thing because, I mean, in the first episode and in this episode, we see a lot of signs about radiation and danger. And so that's kind of a new twist on this. I'm a little bit bummed out because we find out within this whole episode that they introduce her in that Grace is actually terminally ill because she's been exposed to too much radiation. So I was like, really? And she's like, we can talk by radio. And so I hope we see her again. And I think we hopefully will. But like, that was like a big bummer. Anyway.
I think we're even going to the nuclear power plant.
Yeah, probably.
Like it's too juicy of a thing for us not to go back to. And you know what? The radiation zombies is a cool thing. It makes the zombies more dangerous, which this show needs desperately, is zombies that people are afraid of again. It's because when we go back to the airplane, the crash site, and Alicia, who had been slaying bodies left and right, is suddenly struck with like indecision and fear. Mm-hmm. It's good to see that in her, and it gives the show a little boost in the arm that it needs.
Right, and then you have interactions between her and Morgan, and he is definitely like Jedi Master in terms of the things he's gone through, and talks to her about it and basically says, look, you've got to sort of moderate your instinct because
you're crazy
because it can go down a dark path really quickly. He's like, I've definitely been there, and so I get it, but you just can't go in sort of like kill everything kind of an attitude. She pushes back a little bit, but I feel like there was like an interesting interaction between the two of them and an understanding as well. So there's that.
Also in this episode, we've got some fun stuff with Luciana. Like I said, that they kind of take away her strength in the first episode. This one, they give her some comic relief, which is unexpected, but they, you know, so Jenna Elfman, June, gives her some painkillers and leaves her back at the truck stop completely alone, which is a terrible idea. But then she keeps talking about accordions and it's pretty hilarious. And then she's in charge of communicating with Strand on whatever opioids she's on, and it makes for some pretty funny stuff.
Yeah.
And then scary stuff later on for her.
Yeah. But I really like this. I love her character, and I hope they do more with it. In terms of like that, it was an interesting take on it to make her sort of tripping on her painkillers. The other piece of this that we haven't seen is that, you know, there's some weird walker things going on. The whole thing with the kids sort of implying that there's more to whatever's going on in this area. And, you know, the instinct of the the daughter, the sister character, in terms of telling them that they need to get out as quickly as they can, that they shouldn't trust other people. Like, we've heard these themes before, and they try to convince her otherwise, and that's not, you know, happening actually at this point anyway. But she's not necessarily incorrect. And her story is that her and her siblings were on a camping trip with their parents. They got stranded in this area. And they kind of implied that bad things have happened, again, giving you not the full story. And the group is sort of like, okay, we got to get those kids, but we're going to let them run away. But maybe we can convince them again. And there's that weirdness.
Well, that weird standoff with the kids. And this is in the first episode, I guess. The standoff with the kids is a little silly. I would have been like, of course, we're going to be taking care of Luciana right now. She is our priority. If you kids want to go and you're willing to point guns at us, good riddance.
Yeah, goodbye.
That would be my take. Farewell. But it's almost like there's a standoff, like, you're not going anywhere. And it's like, nah, come on, just let him go. Who cares?
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that they're on this mission, and it's like, these are the first probably humans that they've even seen since they started their saving the world mission, and it's not, nothing's going the way they want it to, and maybe they're desperate, which is why they stole a plane that they couldn't fly to begin with. But it does seem like, all right, well, don't hold people against their will. That's obviously
well, right,
stupid.
It's like, you will be part of our community. It's like, okay, yeah. Psychos, that's called a cult.
Yeah.
Like, so and then you also have the like, speaking of the Salazar, Daniel Salazar, Victor sort of face off, where they're hanging out a lot. Victor kind of convinces him that, you know, he's on, at least for the most part, that his mission is real. And Salazar's like, yeah, that's all very good, but I still don't trust you. And you're like toxic and destroy everything that you touch. And that's kind of dumb. Especially coming from a man who was an expert torturer. So like, if he's able to redeem himself, so is Victor. But maybe part of why he has isolated himself is because he does believe that about himself. But that was like, that felt like sort of like a fruit. Obviously we have not seen the end of Daniel, but this was just kind of insane. And, I don't know. What did you think about the whole interaction with them?
A little predictable, I guess. I mean, I don't know why, Daniel would even have him come in and use the radio.
Right.
Unless he's just like making up his mind this whole time. Why not? If you're going to have him use the radio, he has an interaction with Luciana that seems, and he gets his point across, like, yes, your friends do need help, but you are a terrible person. And if you try to help them, you'll just make it worse anyway. So I'm going to still kick you out. And to add insult to injuries, you know, Strand doesn't have a weapon. He fires his rifle a couple of times, which basically rings the dinner bell for the zombies.
Yeah, like, he's a dick.
And then at the end of the episode, Victor's out there with a brick taking care of a bunch of zombies, which kind of underlines like how pathetic the zombies are at this point in the show. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man with brick kills 20 zombies. Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah.
That's why the radiation thing to me really does put a nice kind of
new twist.
Yeah. We also have these like heads being hung up in trees and around the truck stop.
Yep.
And the entrail things. And so this is another potential antagonist who we haven't seen and we don't know who's behind it. Is it the people with the three circles and the funny futuristic outfits? Is it some other group that we don't know about yet?
Yeah, actually, at first I thought it was Grace, because maybe trying to warn people from going into these radiated areas. And maybe right. That was a way to warn people off. But I don't think it is. And I definitely think that the kids know more and that we'll get more into that. And then we should also note that at the end, or close to the end of this episode, we do see the campground, or we see like some of the parents or something.
We don't know exactly who it is in there. Was it the kids' camp before, that they basically all irradiated themselves by burning nuke bodies?
Yeah,
and dying, which is sad, and it almost gets back to those early Gimple days of setting up a diorama of like how a camp collapses.
Right,
because you have John and June kind of walking through, finding the shell casings, looking at a fence that's been repaired. That in the foreground you have like tables with tools on it, and it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, somebody lived here. This was a home, and then the cabins have those sick things on the windows. It doesn't really have that level of detail that were the hallmark of some of those earlier Gimple seasons, like season 2. I still go back to that Shane Andrea tour through that house.
Oh, just like, yeah.
It was so cool. And maybe, you know, you don't want to keep banging that drum, but I did love those dioramas.
Yeah, And the reason why I'm assuming that it's the camp is because they make a comment that, oh, this is where the kids came from. And the kids
were driving the van.
Yeah, they were driving the van for it. So anyway, I guess I will have to find out more in episode 3. So any other things to add for this?
No, I guess not. I think, you know, as far as season beginnings go, this is good. We're still tied to our walkies, which is a bummer. You know, unlike The Walking Dead, where we are now in end of season 9, going into season 10, these guys still have cars that run. So we know that they're not, even before I tell you, like, oh, because of some timeline.
Oh, we know that it has to be earlier because they still have gas and things like that.
They still have gas that works. And honestly, yeah, gas doesn't even last. I forget what the exact number is, but I think it starts to go bad within a couple months. You can stir it up, but it breaks down.
Yep.
So the fact that they're driving at all is a little bit unlikely. Like, June gets into a minivan or something at the end of this episode, and it's like, oh, it's still got 3/4 of a tank, and it starts on the first turn of the key.
I don't think so.
We're 2 years in to the apocalypse, I feel like, at this point. So it does seem a little far-fetched, yeah. But another interesting point about the nuclear plant that Grace mentions is that it only just melted down last year. So it ran for a year post-apocalypse. And I don't know why they would feel like... She talks about, like, we thought we should keep it going, I feel like.
Well,
why not just shut it down? You had the power.
But you didn't do that. That seems
and
stupid.
And you knew how to shut these things down safely, and you kept them running. And, yeah, that is totally irresponsible, because I'm sure there are other plants throughout the country in this, you know, in this world of The Walking Dead, where there were no people there anymore, and the plants failed
in a
vacuum. And there are probably huge portions of the United States that are irradiated. And this was one where it didn't have to go that way, but it did.
Right. So we'll find out more in the next episode. If you have any comments about the season premiere, these first couple of episodes, want to share with us, feel free to email us at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us. ReanimatedPcast is the handle. Or you can leave a note on our website, reanimatedpodcast.com. And I hope I did enjoy it, so I'm not going to say I didn't. I just was hoping that they would clean up some of these sort of, in my mind, sloppy ways of storytelling. So we'll see more, though, in the next episode. And anything else to add, Mr. Tiffin?
No, ma'am. I think I've added all of my ads.
All right. So join us next time when we talk about episodes 3 and 4 of Fear the Walking Dead Season 5. Ciao.
Thanks for listening, and bye.